This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in today for Mark Haney. Later on, we'll hear how one educator uses the slimy and smelly aspects of nature to teach science. And we'll learn why some people develop allergies while others don't. But starting off this afternoon, we're going to take a look at the danger we face in the reduction of the worldwide bee population. Bees are responsible for about one out of every three bites of food we eat, and a drastic loss in their population would be devastating. Joining us to discuss beekeeping and efforts to preserve and protect the bee population, our owner of Two Honeys Bee Company, Liz Tilton, one of the founders of the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens Pollen Nation, Melanie Evans, and co-founder and beekeeper at Queen City Bee Company, Collier Smith. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, email us at talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Now, most crops, grown for their fruit, seeds, nuts, and fiber require pollination from insects, and by far the main insect pollinators are bees. So what happens if the bees don't pollinate?
Well, if the bees don't pollinate, then we lose one-third of our food and drink. They also will reduce the ecodiversity that we would find in our community. And that's one of the issues facing the bee population, not just social bees like the honeybee, Apis mellifera, but also solitary bees. Solitary bees, in fact, pollinate more efficiently and more widespread than honeybees, which is what a lot of people just automatically jump to when they hear about endangered bee species, is the honeybee, because they produce such delicious honey and pollen, and we can do so much with the byproducts of a honeybee hive. So the reality is that social bees are also very important, if not more so. And the use of pesticides, as well as reducing their natural habitat, creates a problem with that bee population, with that solitary bee population.
So let's talk about the different kinds of bees. You've mentioned honeybees a lot, and we'll talk more about them as the show goes on. What other kinds of bees are out there? Liz?
Melanie, there's a ground.
Melanie,
that's okay. There's a ground-dwelling bees. There's solitary bees. There's the stingless bees. Believe it or not, there's 20,000 species of bees in the world, and only about 7 of them are honey-producing bees. So there are so many bees, and just in the greater Cincinnati area, about 4,000 species exist. So there's so many more bees beyond what people think of the cute round fuzzy one that we all call the very common bumblebee, but there's many different types of bumbles. So the list goes on. I am not an expert on all of the bees. I have a big textbook that I refer to, but I do not have all of those several thousand species in my head.
Are they all endangered?
No. They actually just added the first North American endangered species that were native to Hawaii. So they're technically United States. But the honeybee that we are focusing on a little bit more is not technically endangered as of yet, but it's in trouble.
And a lot of what we get asked is, what can I do to help the bee population or the honeybee population? I take that question as the bee population, because even on a postage stamp size property, you can plant native grasses and flowers, let your yard look maybe not as great as what is socially acceptable, but you allow habitat for those bumblebees, those solitary bees, those leafcutter bees, and that will help everyone's lawn. That'll help everybody's food source, and it's not just the honeybee. Yeah,
it goes beyond the honeybee too. You know, when you're a lot of the conservation actions that we give at the zoo for our guests for how to help honeybees, it goes beyond just them. When you're helping honeybees, you're helping other beneficial pollinators, and even beyond just the insects and the pollinators, but all of the plants and the animals within that ecosystem as well. So your conservation efforts go beyond just the one little honeybee that we usually talk about.
And I think we often talk about honeybees first, because we're beekeepers. I mean, honeybees are social insects. They live in large colonies, and you can manage those colonies. So beekeepers have a unique window into something we usually, you know, I'm no scientist. I'm not an entomologist. I have a degree in English literature. But suddenly, becoming a hobby beekeeper turned me into a little entomologist. I had a window into how these insects relate to what's blooming in my yard or what's not blooming in my yard or what the weather has, what impact weather has on my yard and my neighborhood. So we often focus on honeybees because we have a daily interaction with those. It's really hard to kind of study all of the other pollinators that we have. But as I understand it, most pollinators are in decline because of a loss of habitat. I mean, birds are pollinators and yellow jackets and wasps and all of those are pollinators. And I don't think any of them are really thriving. I think most of them are in decline. I'm not even sure about that, but I think that's true.
Let's focus on honeybees for just a moment, and I will admit I have a little bit of a history here in that my grandfather raised bees when I was a child,
awesome.
So I always remember what that fresh honey is like, and now a very good friend of ours raises bees, so we get fresh honey all the time, or locally harvested honey, I guess is the best way to describe that, that we regularly use. And my husband is looking at maybe even raising bees at some point. So that being the case, how easy is it or difficult is it to raise bees in your backyard? And do you have to get a permit? And how do you make your neighbors not a nervous wreck that, gosh, there's going to be all these bees flying around?
Good question.
Well, to answer your last question first, honey goes a long way in quelling your neighbor's fears.
Pass out that honey.
Yeah, so if you have a concerned neighbor, feed them some honey and invite them over and let them sit by the hive unprotected by a veil and, you know, point out some bee behavior. And those neighbors quickly get on board and think, wow, this is really cool. I want to come over here all the time and watch you beekeep.
My neighbors have been great about accepting my hives. I do gift them honey, but even more than that, they keep me up to date with how many bees they've seen in their yard. They really enjoy having this. I think there's probably a limit to how much they would enjoy. Mm-hmm. So that's why I moved most of my beekeeping out to other areas so other people can enjoy them along with my neighbors. But you asked what's involved in starting to keep bees. And it can be so simple, Marianne, and it can be inexpensive. I mean, all you need is something to keep the bees in. You can either buy a beehive from a bee supplier for usually, you know, it's probably more expensive to do it that way. Or you can make your own little top bar hive for about $30 or $40. You can buy highfalutin equipment, or you can go to eBay and buy something that's used and has patina and works just as well. It's very easy to get into beekeeping. You probably do need to have a source for your bees and your queen. I think that's where some of us come in. We can certainly hook you up with a supplier for that or sell that to you. But it's so easy, and it takes very little room, and it depends on
How much room? You mentioned very little room. I mean, how big can you do this in the middle of the city? Can you do this?
I'll say that I have managed hives on a fire escape over Washington Park, on a deck in Over the Rhine. There's a condominium above the Senate restaurant where somebody keeps a hive. Or I keep many hives on some farms in Wilmington. It really depends on what you have. They make a beehive for your space.
Do you need a permit to do this, or can you just go do it?
Depends on where you live. Mm-hmm. So check in on your local county.
So it's a county thing or a city?
It's usually like a township or a... But if you live in a township or a village or something that does not allow you to keep bees, then that's the time to start getting involved in local politics and try to change those regulations, because bees are everywhere anyway. They are in trees. They live in houses. I mean, we're removing bees from places all the time. Every village has bees. So, I mean, it may be a good time to sort of go to city council and go to a few meetings.
Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you feel like that's not a something that's possible for you. You could look outside of your own township and find possibly someone else that wants to keep bees in their yard, but they don't want to actually go through the process of beekeeping. There are people that would like to have bees on their land that can, that maybe have farmland that they want the pollination services there, but they just don't want to partake in taking care of them. So there are people that are looking for beekeepers that will just keep bees on their land.
Do you need to do anything special in terms of what you plant to keep the bees happy once you get the hives on the property?
No, you don't. Bees are expert foragers, so they'll find their nectar or pollen source pretty much regardless of where you put them. And the neat thing about urban beekeeping that I've encountered and read about and learned through experience is the diversity, the ecodiversity of the plant life in city-type atmospheres, especially Cincinnati with so much green space in our parks. There's all kinds of food sources. We started in Northside. We have hives downtown on top of the Coffee Emporium. We have hives on top of the Woodburn Brewery in Walnut Hills and behind the Urban Artifact Brewery and also in Northside.
Just so, real quick before before we have to take a break, does the type of food source that they find affect the taste of the honey?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Completely.
Well, there's more to it than that. We'll talk more about that when we finish. After our break here, we're going to talk more about bees and what they eat and how it makes the honey taste and what the bee populations are doing and what it all means to you as we continue our conversation about bees and beekeeping. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in today for Mark Haney. We're discussing beekeeping and just how critical bees are to the food we eat. Joining us today, owner of Two Honeys Bee Company, Liz Tilton, one of the founders of the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens Pollination, Melanie Evans, and co-founder and beekeeper at Queen City Bee Company, Collier Smith. You can join the conversation. In fact, we'd love to hear from you at 513-419-7100. Email us, talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. They'll be happy to answer your questions about perhaps becoming a beekeeper yourself, or if you do keep bees and want to offer any tips or advice. Again, we'd love to hear from you at 513-419-7100. So before we went to our break, we were talking about the whole idea of different food supplies for the bees and how that makes the honey taste. And it's happened a time or two with, as I mentioned, my grandfather raised bees, that sometimes you're like, oh, that's not the best honey I've ever had. And other times it's good. What do you think that they should be? What is makes the best tasting honey?
Well, I think every honey I've ever tasted that's local honey is the best honey I've ever tasted in my life. It's really, you know, spring. It depends on what the bees are feeding on. Spring honey is light and clear. It looks like water or gel, and it's very tangy and bright. And then as the season progresses and different things are blooming, darker plants are blooming in the fall. I mean darker like flowers, but there's something dark about the nectar in fall blooming plants or flowers that makes a very dark and very dark tasting honey. And I think it's, you know, I love every one of them. I actually prefer the fall honey the most. But you had asked a question earlier, Marianne, about what do you plant for bees? And this always rubs some people the wrong way, but I keep bees in urban environments and I keep bees in suburban environments and I keep bees in farmland. And the bees that I have that live in the inner city, even from Oakley towards center of Cincinnati, do far better as far as honey collection than the bees that live in Montgomery or Indian Hill or Terrace Park or even in farms where they're farming corn and soybeans. It's amazing to me. And I personally have decided not to place my bees on property anymore where the homeowners or the landowners are not willing to plant wildflowers or to do something to support the bees as far as nectar supply. So for me, this is where it gets my heart racing a little bit, because for me, it all starts out with those blooms.
Collier, you were talking about different things to plant and you know, different settings. Tell us what your experience has been.
I have a similar experience to Liz. I think she hit the nail right on the head. the urban environment has plenty of opportunities for honeybees to find nectar and pollen sources. The rural environment, which so many people think is the right environment for bees, ends up being possibly a dangerous environment for bees due to the monocrop type farming that goes on in those rural places.
You mean it's just all corn?
Correct. Mm-hmm. All one food source, which can lead to two problems. One, the pesticides that are used, and two, that pollen or nectar source is only available for that brief time that one single crop is blooming.
So if that's a concern and you're planting a variety of different things, one of the things I'm curious about, and I think I've read somewhere, and Melanie, you can help out with this perhaps, is how far will the bees go away from the hive to go collect their food?
Yeah, they can travel up to like 3 miles away from their hive in that circumference.
Really? So,
yeah,
so if your neighbors are worried, it's maybe the neighbors 3 miles away that might
absolutely
be seeing a lot of your bees.
Yeah. And one thing I want to mention too, since I work at a botanical garden too, we have a large team of horticulturists that's been studying the plants that are really beneficial to pollinators for several decades. And they've actually compiled a list of plants that they find most beneficial to pollinators, not just bees, but the butterflies, the birds, everybody. And those lists are compiled on our website. And we have perennial lists, annual lists, trees. So anything that anybody wants to know more information on what they can plant in their yard or on their land, that contributes to helping with bees if beekeeping is a little bit too much for you to pick up as a hobby.
What about, yeah. I'm sorry.
I noticed last growing season that all the garden centers I went to had a special area where they held plants that were recommended by the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens.
Yes.
So even if you don't go on their website and look for the list, you can go to your local garden center, and almost all of them participated in this program, and just buy whatever's on the shelf there, and you know you're helping pollinators.
Yeah, the zoo's logo's on it. It's approved by the zoo.
I would like to encourage people to plant things that bloom more in the fall. People are always planning, and I'm guilty too. We're always so excited to see spring come and summer, and so we plant things that bloom in the heat of those seasons, and then we kind of let go of it in the fall. And that's when the bees really need to be collecting a lot of nectar in order to gather 40 to 60 pounds of honey that they're going to use to survive the winter.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Now's the time to plant trees too. You plant them in the fall. A lot of people don't know that.
That's correct. I get a lot of comments from people in the spring asking where the bees are. In the springtime, there was a number of what's considered a major honey sources, usually from trees. And so those bees, those honeybees, are on a two-way track to that nectar source and back. They're not really messing around with your flowers in your garden or the clover in your yard at that time. The clover is a fall honey flow, and that's something that they'll be looking for around this time of year, usually from late July through October.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. James called from Fairfield, and I guess he was shy, but he wanted me to ask the question. He says he has a swarm of bees at his house stinging him. Can he call someone to remove them?
My bet is those are not honeybees. My bet, starting in about August, I get a lot of phone calls about stinging insects, and they usually are not honeybees. Honeybees are not aggressive and generally would not just sting people indiscriminately. Those sound like yellow jackets. If James wants to send a picture to any of us, we can identify the insect, and from that point on, then determines how you would get rid of.
Well, let's say they are yellow jackets, because I know those do cause problems. What do you recommend for people that have that problem?
Well, I've recently started recommending for yellow jackets, who also have their own benefits to your mm-hmm. garden. Yellow jackets and hornets, some species can remove up to 2 pounds of insects, mm-hmm. Possible pests, from your 2,000 square foot garden in a season's time. But if you absolutely cannot live with them in your brush pile, find their entrance ideally at night. And you can use pesticides and poisons, but I do not suggest it because it's not environmentally responsible. But a clear glass or plastic bowl placed over their entrance at night for your own safety And then maybe a brick on top of it to hold it down will basically starve them out, and hopefully they do not find another way out to continue to survive.
Again, our number, 513-419-7100. Dave called from Northern Kentucky, and he says, how do you control for parasitic mites and for the viruses that prevent the bees from finding their hive? Melanie, do you have the answer to that one?
That's a tough one. The mites are one of the number one causes of the colony collapse disorder, which is also the fancy word of what we diagnose our bees with that are why they're on the decline, the captive honeybees. And so there's many different methods for how you can manage the mites. There's preventative products out there. There's chemicals. There's some that are considered organic. There's methods and ways that you can beekeep that will keep their numbers down. And you just want to keep them at a low threshold. But it's almost impossible to keep them completely out of your hives. Do you have ways that you like to recommend, Liz?
James is asking a pretty technical question about beekeeping.
Yeah. We can talk about this for the full hour.
But it does kind of bring up a philosophy of beekeeping. My own philosophy is treatment-free beekeeping. I don't use any chemicals, no pesticides, no chemicals whatsoever in any of my hives. I let my bees draw their own foundation. And I don't have a problem with mites. I lose beehives too every winter, but I used to use foundation. Well, these are all technical terms.
But you just go with natural and it
works for you. Just go natural. You're going to lose a few, but it's more fun, and I don't lose nearly as many as I used to.
Well, let's talk about the whole idea of losing bees with the concerns about bees and the hives dying out and those sorts of things. Do you find that happens a lot around here? Is it as dangerous here as it is in some other areas of the country?
Yeah, nationwide, I think the figure is 40% loss for the average beekeeper. And I think beekeepers around here, we could say it's about that, about 40%.
Some years
loss.
It's worse for me.
Yeah.
40%, that's almost half. I mean, that's a lot to lose.
Yes.
Is that just part of doing business?
No, it used to not be. It used to not be a problem. It has become a problem, and people have been trying to figure out what is going on. Why are we suddenly losing so many hives? And I think most beekeepers who have been doing this for a while will probably tell you it's a combination of several factors. For my position is that I think it's a loss of habitat, a loss of flowers. If you have a weak hive that's low on food, it's not going to withstand anything that comes along to kill it. And so I try to keep a lot. So for me, I don't introduce any chemicals, which I think kill the bees. And I keep my bees where there's a lot of nectar sources. And then I lose far fewer bees.
Yeah, I think the amount of attention that the beekeeper gives his or her particular hives has a direct reflection on the survival rate. The last 2 years, we've experienced a 90 and 100% survival rate in our bee yard at Queen City Bee Company. And a lot of that has to do with, I believe, the attention we pay to our bees. We get into the beehives at least once every 14 days, if not every 7 days, depending on the season. But then also we look for those signs of pests. We look for those signs of starvation. And there's always something the beekeeper can do. It's usually not an immediate fix, but it's something that, you know, feeding them now will generate a generation in the weeks to come.
So you can even feed them with sugar water, isn't that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, but you don't want to. I mean, I don't want to in mine. I'd rather keep enough honey on the hive so that they can continue to eat what they have collected from nectar.
I guess I'm saying if something goes terribly wrong, though, and you don't have the honey, then you can supplement with other kinds of food.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I just want to mention, too, that I always use the analogy of bees being kind of like the canary in the coal mine. And stating why they're on the decline, it's just like anything in nature, right? Nothing has one simple answer. It's a very complex web of problems that are going on. And so these bees are display, their decline is a display to us that there are a lot more there's a lot more going on in nature and in our ecosystems than we can see, because they're so sensitive to the slightest bits of change that are going on. So, and it's even things that are outside of our control as beekeepers. Like if people are spraying chemicals within that 3 mile radius of the hive, they're going to be exposed to that. That's going to make them sick. And even the invasive parasites that are attacking and killing some of the hives, that's a big problem too. So there's just a lot of things that can be outside of our control, but it's a bigger picture for how we can respect nature and treat the ecosystem rather than just our hives and focus on conservation at a bigger picture.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Tanya's calling from downtown. Hi, Tanya. What's your question?
Hi, my name is Tanya. I'm actually a 2003 Zoo Academy student from the Cincinnati Zoo. I have a quick question.
Sure.
Just like taking care of pets, do you have to worry about any type of bacterial, fungal, or disease with maintaining bees?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's several different types of funguses and pathogens that can get into your hive that you have to watch out for. And they're a little bit more rare than the parasitic issues, but those do occur.
Good. Well, thank you so much for your call, Tanya. We appreciate it. Laurel's calling. Laurel, what's your question?
Hi. Can you please recommend a natural type of method or either plants or other ways of repelling insects that like to enter the home versus having to use a harmful pesticide that would hurt the environment and bees?
Yes, absolutely. In terms of to protect your home from honeybees, they prefer a entrance around 2 inches in diameter. They prefer a cavity in your home approximately 30 to 40 liters in volume. So just by going around your home, I mean, I'm talking from the eave of your roof to the foundation in your basement, go around and look for entrances that the honeybee can access and reduce those or eradicate them altogether, poor choice of words, eliminate them altogether, and you can hopefully head off a possible honeybee infestation. As far as other pests, I think they kind of go along the same kind of route as the honeybee. I mean, they first need an entrance to get into your home.
Laurel, I hope that helps. Thanks for your call.
Okay, do you have any recommendations on plants? Any type of shrubbery or things like that that would repel insects?
No, I don't.
We're not seeing any ideas here on
we
that
just
one.
Know how to attract bees.
Thanks so much for your call, Laurel. We appreciate it. Michelle emailed and she says she has a perfect place for hives. Is there someone she can call who might be interested in using her land for bees?
Absolutely. You can call Two Honeys Bee Company as well as Queen City mm-hmm. Bee Company. And we can work with you on what your goals are. We always like to figure out, first of all, what your goals in beekeeping are. A lot of folks that was stated earlier say that they want honey or they want the bees on the property, but they don't necessarily want to do any of the work, which I totally understand. It is a lot of work. But whatever your goal is, I'm pretty sure one of the two of us could figure out a program for you.
And we do have links on our website, wvxu.org, to get a hold of both of them, so you can check it out there. One more quick call. Casey, what's your question?
Hi, you might have answered this earlier. I'm not sure. I might have missed it. But I'm curious how feasible it is to raise bees in more of a suburban environment and like how much space you would actually need.
We did talk about that a little bit, but one if you want to just give us a quick overview.
Go ahead.
Earlier I did say you can keep bees. It depends on what size hive we make. Hives are made to fit anything practically. I mean, we've kept little hives on fire escapes over Washington Park, or you can keep these huge Langstroth hive, which are the tall white boxes you're used to seeing. You can keep those in a suburban yard.
How much space do you have, Casey?
I'm thinking like an acre, acre and a half.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just wondering if I'll be the bee neighbor.
Well, we did talk about that earlier in the show, and I guess their answer basically was hand off some honey once you get those bees, and the neighbors will be more appreciative. We want to thank you so much for your call, Casey. We appreciate it. We are almost out of time. I want to ask another quick question. Are you worried about Zika and the mosquitoes being sprayed you know, to worry about the bees?
Yes, I am. I've noticed a few companies that have taken hold here in the city of Cincinnati over the last couple of months that are going around and treating for mosquitoes. I'd like to stress that as far as my research has gone, no cases of Zika have been transmitted via the mosquito in the state of Ohio yet. The cases that have been transmitted and that are active are suspected sexual transmission. So I think there's a big difference there.
But, you know, yeah, we worry about spraying for Zika. But my neighbors, I love my neighbors. My neighbors in global neighbors have lawn care services coming in and spraying their lawns. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all devastating. I wish that we could, well, I don't know about what to say about Zika. I don't know the answer about that.
But there is the concern of pesticides of any kind, not just if they're spraying for Zika. Yep. Well, we do want to remind everybody, go to our website, WVXU.org. We have links to all the information that you folks were talking about today or ways to get a hold of that. I want to thank you all for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking about bees this afternoon and ways to raise them even in your own yard, no matter how big or small it is. My guest, owner of Two Honeys Bee Company, Liz Tilton, one of the founders of the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens Pollen Nation, Melanie Evans. Also today, co-founder and beekeeper at Queen City Bee Company, Collier Smith. Coming up, Cincinnati Zoo Director Thane Maynard talks with Anna Rothschild about her Gross Science YouTube channel. And in Focus on Technology, Ann Thompson explores why some of us develop allergies and some don't. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.